guys, and welcome to episode 151 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, it is my pleasure today to announce that I interviewed Dr. Russ Harris. Russ originally trained as a medical doctor, but he is better known for his work within acceptance and commitment therapy, having written several self-help books and many practitioner guides too. Particularly, the book you may know him from is The Happiness Trap. It's a book I read, 4 or 5 years ago now, and it really kind of opened my mind to see thoughts as not necessarily fact, as potentially just kind of noise within our heads. So it's great to finally get him on, and although Russ is a therapist, he's not particularly an OCD therapist, but I wanted to get him on because many of you have said to me over the years how that book, particularly The Happiness Trap, has really helped you, has given you new insight into kind of what goes on in your mind and ways of dealing with it. And also acceptance and commitment therapy is an area that, you know, I have research interest in, but it's worth disclaiming that ERP is still the gold standard for treating OCD and the one I absolutely recommend. ERP is part of cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's been by far clinically proven to be the most effective thing. More and more therapists will bring in ACT principles anyway to do alongside ERP, and I do think they complement each other. If you're interested in how the two merge a bit better, listen to my interviews with Dr. John Abramowitz, who has done a fair amount of research and is doing more into merging the two. But yeah, disclaimer, ERP is very much the gold standard, and that's what you should be looking at to treat your OCD. But in this episode, we of course talk about his book, The Happiness Trap, and in fact, just the meaning behind the title, The Happiness Trap. I think it's quite an interesting title. He demonstrates quite a few exercises and actually does it with you, the listener. So he's talking directly to you and guides you through it. So if you're in a safe place while listening to this, you know, i.e. not driving a car or something else that could be potentially risky, if you are sitting down or standing up in a safe place, then absolutely try out these exercises if you wish. It was really cool. I didn't expect him to do that, but it brings some of the metaphors he describes to life. We're going to talk about the choice point, this idea of doing away moves, away from what we value, and towards move towards what we value. We talk about living a value-led life and how applying some of these ACT principles when feeling emotionally overwhelmed, along with many other questions. And lots of you did submit your questions, and I am very grateful for that. I didn't have as much time as I thought, so I couldn't ask them all, but I appreciate you sending them in. If you get time, you could leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen. That'd be deeply appreciated. It's reviews like that that help me get guests like Russ. So thank you for listening, for leaving a review, for liking, whatever. I deeply appreciate it, because this interview wouldn't have happened without it. So thanks a lot, guys. And without further ado, here is Dr. Russ Harris. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Russ Harris. Russ is a medical practitioner, author of the international best-selling self-help book, The Happiness Trap, and is a world-renowned trainer of acceptance and commitment therapy. Welcome to the show, Russ.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I get immediate dose of imposter syndrome when I hear myself described that way. It's like, luckily you didn't say world renowned for what? So
yeah, well,
we'll keep those stories quiet.
Yeah, well, that was a real condensed introduction as well. Going through, you know, there's so many more things I could have put. So, and it's good to have you on, because your book was one of the first books I read when I started to kind of tackle the troubling thoughts I was experiencing several years ago. I just picked it up. I had no idea that it could potentially help me with what I was going through. And I've spoken to so many people over the years from this podcast who have just said your book is one of their favorites. So it's good to have you here.
That's lovely to hear.
Pleasure. So what's your kind of therapist story, or what got you into treating people?
Well, I guess I was miserable. You know, I was a GP, family doctor, and I, you know, I ticked all the boxes in terms of career and status and income, and, you know, like done all the things they said you should do to have a good life and be happy. And I was really depressed, and I just started, I guess reading self-help and exploring various self-help avenues and trying to make sense of why I was so miserable. And I guess it was that personal journey that got me interested in doing therapy. What happened was, as a GP, as I was kind of exploring my own issues and problems psychologically, my GP consultation started to get longer and longer and longer. I started to, I was averaging like a 25, 30-minute consultation where 5 minutes would be on the physical stuff and 25 minutes would be on the psychological aspects of kind of health and well-being. And gradually I became, I kind of lost interest in traditional medicine, and I started training as a therapist. And then the first model I trained in was traditional cognitive behavioral therapy, which I found very helpful. I had a lot of negative thoughts, as we all do, and I found it was useful. There was a lot of good stuff in CBT, but it didn't stop these negative thoughts from coming back again and again and again, and it didn't really kind of get rid of my anxiety, although it did reduce it. And so I started to look at other approaches, became interested in mindfulness meditation through the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn, and found that helpful, but found it very hard to kind of introduce mindfulness meditation in a therapy setting with my, because I switched careers. Sorry, I skipped a bit. Eventually, kind of, I cut down on my GP stuff and did more and more therapy. And, so it was, I was trying to kind of combine the bits of CBT that I liked, the bits of mindfulness that I liked. I was also very interested in Viktor Frankl's logotherapy. You're nodding your head, you kind of,
Big fan of Victor.
So your listeners may or may not know, he was a Jewish psychiatrist who survived Auschwitz concentration camp and wrote lots of books about finding meaning and purpose in the face of adversity. And I was trying to bring all of these things together. And then a mate of mine said, "Oh, we'll track out this kind of ACT stuff, this acceptance and commitment therapy," which I'd never heard of. So I went to the bookstore, bought the book. There was just one textbook at that time. And stayed up all night reading it cover to cover and thinking, "Oh my God, this is amazing!" The kind of the clouds parted, there were angels flying around. I could hear the Hallelujah chorus. It was like, "Oh, this is exactly what I've been looking for." And that was 2003. So I kind of it was just love at first sight, and that love affair has never stopped.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. And was that first book, was it by Stephen Hayes or was it someone else?
Yeah, so that was the original 1999 ACT textbook
Yep.
by Steve Hayes, Kelly Wilson, and Kirk Strozow. And I didn't fully understand it. I don't know if you've read that
I
book.
haven't,
It
no.
was quite a technical book with a lot of terms from behavior analysis that I didn't really understand, and a lot of stuff about relational frame theory, which I didn't understand. I read that book so many times trying to figure out. I think I finally understood it after I'd read it about 15 times. I mean, part of the reason I wrote The Happiness Trap was really to help me understand ACT and how it applies. So it was, I wanted to, I figured if I could explain it to myself, then I could explain it to others. So it was, I learned a massive amount through that book. I'm actually rewriting it now. It's
Oh,
a bit
brilliant.
old now. It's 11 years old, so I'm
Yeah.
working on the second edition.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, I look forward to seeing that one come out. And for those that, I mean, I've talked about ACT a fair bit, and I've obviously had Stephen Hayes on this show and a couple others who've talked about ACT. But for those that may be listening to my podcast for the first time, how would you describe what ACT is?
Well, ACT has been described as an existential, humanistic, mindfulness-based, psychodynamic, cognitive behavioral therapy, which I think is a fair kind of description, because it's a process-based model based on a few core processes, which can be found to some extent in many, many other models and traditions of therapy. And I would say ACT, really, the aim of ACT is to help people build a rich and meaningful life, while effectively handling the pain that inevitably goes with it. And we can think of ACT as basically based on three core processes. It helps people to kind of clarify their values and use them as a compass to guide them in life to act effectively, which for short I often refer to as just doing what matters. It's about helping people to kind of open up and make room for difficult thoughts, feelings, emotions, and memories and urges, all that difficult stuff that shows up inside us. We learn how to open up and make room for it and kind of let it flow through us without controlling us or sweeping us away or holding us back. I refer to that as kind of opening up, and it enables us to kind of focus our attention on what's important right here, right now, and engage fully in what we're doing, what I call being present. So the aim of ACT is to help everybody and anybody learn how to be present, open up and do what matters, how to engage in life, focus on what's important, open up and make room for the difficult stuff inside you, and to act effectively guided by your values.
Yeah, no, I love that. Love that. So your book, The Happiness Trap, which I'm sure a lot of my listeners will have either read or be somewhat familiar with. What's the kind of story behind that? Particularly that, you know, the title grabs people.
Yeah, well, I was very lucky that the title was originally it's a terrible title. It was called Elevation, and I notice Stephen King's just got a new horror book out called Elevation. And it was The Happiness Trap was the title of chapter 17 originally, and the guy who was editing the book said, you know, you should use this as the main title for the book, and I was like, wow, that's a great idea. So it just kind of I think it summarizes one of the key themes of the book, you know, the popular ideas about happiness really will make you miserable if you live your life based on them. And that was one of the big insights that I got when I, you know, discovered ACT. It was like, oh my God, I've been holding on to all these ideas about how to be happy and what happy is, and you know, they're actually holding me back in life, you know.
Yeah, really good point. Is that because happiness is just, it's one emotion out of many? And as a society, we've said this is the main one and only emotion we should have.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, so, I mean, you've nailed one of the main happiness traps there, which is thinking of happiness as an emotion, as a feeling. Most people, if you ask them what happiness is, they'll say it's feeling good or a good feeling. That's a very recent definition of happiness. You know, that's really probably about 100 years old. Throughout most of human history, happiness has been defined as doing good rather than feeling good. So ACT takes us back to that older notion of happiness, doing good. In other words, kind of living your values, acting effectively, doing the stuff that's important and meaningful in life. Because, you know, if your notion of happiness is that it's a feeling and it's about feeling good, well, how long can a good feeling last, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess as you try to hold on to that feeling, it's you're only then going to have the pain of realizing you can't hold on to it. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. If you've got it, it's like, oh, how long is this good feeling going to last for? You know, and if you haven't got it, it's where did my good feelings go? I've got to get them back again. So I think most of us have struggled with that. And I know I certainly did for a long, long time, you know. Yeah. So it's I think another one of the big kind of happiness traps out there is the idea that happiness is the natural state for human beings. You know, that if you give humans food and water and shelter and a good social network, they should just naturally be happy. And one of the things that I really got from ACT was this idea that, you know, that happiness is not the natural state for human beings. You know, if you were happy, happy, happy all the time, you'd be diagnosed with manic psychosis, you know. The normal, I love the kind of ACT metaphor that emotions are like the weather and they're changing all the time. And the normal state for a human being is an ever-changing flow of emotions. It's normal to feel happy and sad and angry and anxious, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess you can live your life despite whatever you're feeling. It's not there to stop you. Yeah.
Yeah, which, and then the third big happiness trap then is kind of based on the other two, is that if humans, if it's the normal state to be happy, and happy is a good feeling, then that means that the way for me to be happy is to get rid of all my negative thoughts and feelings and replace them with positive ones, and of course that underlies so many of the issues that we struggle with in therapy, this quest to get rid of pain and feel good,
Yeah, that's a good
which is
point.
normal. I mean,
Yeah.
it's normal. I mean, we all want to feel good. No one wants to feel bad, unless you're
Absolutely.
into sadomasochism. But,
That's true. And I think in the case of OCD, it's very much like largely what compulsions are trying to do is to alleviate anxiety and to push away or suppress bad and negative thoughts, which usually means you get more of them.
It works in the short term, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
If
does,
you
yeah.
do the compulsion, there's short-term relief from that anxiety, but in the long term, everything gets worse, and that fits into the category of so many things like drugs and alcohol and so forth. They give us this short-term relief from pain, but in the long term, life gets worse and the pain comes back and increases. Look, my compulsion was eating an Australian food called double-coated chocolate Tim Tams, if you've ever been to Australia, Australians love this. Is kind of the national staple diet of Australia. So as a GP, I mean, I grew up in England, and I trained in medicine in Newcastle upon Tyne. As a GP in Melbourne, I had very high levels of anxiety, and I was anxious all day long. And the way that I would deal with anxiety is through eating double-coated chocolate Tim Tams. And so on a, I mean, these are big packets of chocolate biscuits, about 12 thick chocolate biscuits in a packet. And I would eat a Tim Tam, and it would push my anxiety away for about 1 minute, enough to see the next patient, and then it would be back again. And really, on a bad day, I could eat, 5 packets of double-coated chocolate Tim Tams, and some of your viewers are going, "What?" And some of them are going, "Only five?" And I was massively overweight. I was like, so today I weigh 80 kilograms, which is a bit overweight, but back then I was weighing like 105 kilograms, which of course fed into being miserable. So I was doing this stuff that gave me short-term relief from anxiety, but didn't kind of make my life better, created more problems than it solved,
Yeah, very true. And with that one, you've also got the amount of sugar you're putting into your body, that's naturally going to spike anxiety.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, compulsions have analogs in normal everyday behavior. I guess you can say those compulsions are like an exaggeration of what pretty much everyone does.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so I love act metaphors or metaphors just generally. And whenever I get sort of an ACT practitioner on, I like to get them to share their favorite metaphors. So I guess specifically around kind of acceptance of thoughts and maybe diffusing from thoughts, so seeing them as separate to yourself. What are some of your favorite metaphors around those things?
Look, I think my favorite metaphor for diffusion is actually a physically acted out metaphor. And I would strongly encourage your listeners to actually participate so they kind of understand
Cool.
what this metaphor is. I call it the hands as thoughts metaphor. I don't know if you know this one. If your listeners are driving a car or, operating heavy machinery or doing brain surgery at this point, what I would recommend is they kind of get themselves into a position where they're not using their hands or driving or doing something like that, so they can actually kind of use their hands and participate in this exercise to see what it is. So wherever you are right now as you're listening to this, what I'm going to get you to do is put your hands together as if they're the pages of an open book. And just look around you, in front of you and around you, and imagine that what you're looking at in front of you and around you is everything in life that is important to you, all the stuff that matters, the people you love and care about, your favorite food and movies, Also, what's in front of you are all the problems you need to address and face up to in your life, and also all the kind of tasks you need to do just to make your life work, whether that's cooking dinner or typing on a computer or, getting the kids' lunches ready for school or whatever it is. Okay. And your hands are all your thoughts and feelings. And what I'm going to ask you to do, folks, as you're listening to this, is ever so slowly raise your hands up towards your face, bringing them up higher and higher till they're actually covering your eyes. And look out from behind your eyes and notice three things. Firstly, how much are you missing out on right now? If in front of you is your favorite movie or person, how kind of cut off and disconnected are you? Secondly, notice how hard it is to focus your attention. If in front of you is the person you love or the problem you need to address or the task you want to do well, how hard is it to give your full attention to focus on that? And thirdly, keep your hands up here covering your eyes. If you've put them down already, exercise hasn't finished yet, put them back up. Thirdly, notice how difficult is it to take action and do the stuff that matters like this? How difficult is it to drive a car, cuddle a baby, type on a computer, hug the person you love, or massage your pet donkey while you're busy doing this? It's difficult, right? Now, let's see what happens. So this is kind of what in ACT we call getting hooked by your thoughts and feelings. The technical name for this is fusion. So you're now hooked by your thoughts and feelings, or fused with your thoughts and feelings. Now let's see what happens as we unhook, or technically as we defuse. So again, follow my instructions. Your hands should be over your eyes. Now ever so slowly lower your hands. Ever so notice what happens to your view of the room, to the things that you can see. And just kind of rest your hands in your lap and notice how much easier now it is to focus on what's important, to be present with the people you love, to engage in what you're doing. And just kind of move your hands and your arms around in some random way. Move them around. Notice now how much easier it is to take action, to drive a car, cuddle a baby, type on a computer. So it's much more easy to act effectively, to engage in your life. And finally, notice that these things haven't disappeared. These hands are here. You haven't chopped them off and got rid of them. If there's something useful you can do with them, use them. But if there's nothing useful you can do with them, you let them sit there. Even the most painful thoughts and feelings usually have some use for us. Usually, they tell us about something we need to address or deal with, or they're a reminder to be kinder to ourselves or something like that. But if there's nothing useful you can do with them, you just let them sit there. So it's a long metaphor, but that's kind of my favorite one, because you've kind of got, you've got three of the kind of main ACT mindfulness processes there. So as you start to kind of separate from your hands, that represents diffusion, short for cognitive diffusion. As you start to focus your attention on where you are and what you're doing, that's contacting the present moment. And that last little bit where your hands are just kind of sitting in your lap there, that's acceptance. You're allowing the thoughts and feelings to be there. So.
Yeah. No, I love that. And it's a good one for OCD. And there was a study done a few years ago which found that 95% of people have intrusive thoughts. But the difference is some of OCD, they stick around longer. And because there's anxiety, they become more scary. So a lot of people with OCD try and they want to be completely free of those thoughts. And what I liked about that example was you're saying your hands are still kind of by your waist. You haven't got rid of the thoughts, but they're not bothering you. If you can't do anything with them, allow them to just be there by your side, as opposed to running from them, pushing them away.
95%, right? Gosh, I would have thought it would be 100%.
Well, I think the other five were lying. I reckon it is 100%, absolutely. Everyone's had that thought of like jumping in front of a train or something, and or various thoughts like that, or. Stephen Hayes shared one about throwing his child off a balcony when he was on the podcast. So everyone gets them, but yeah, I see it just sticks around longer. Were there any other metaphors that you really liked or you felt were worth sharing?
Well, yeah, but the other metaphor is actually very similar to the hands as thoughts. It's a metaphor for experiential avoidance and experiential acceptance. And again, I would encourage viewers to, I call this the pushing away paper metaphor. And again, viewers, I would encourage them to do this. You need a sheet of paper, or you could use a smartphone, or you could even use a pen, any kind of small object that you can hold tightly with both hands. And the setup for this metaphor is the same as for the previous one. As you look around you, is everything that's important that matters, all the people that you, and things that you love, all the problems you need to address, and all the tasks you need to do. And what you're doing this time is you're grabbing a sheet of paper. Have you got one there, Stuart?
Yeah, I've got my notepad, yeah.
You know, Pat, that's fine. Now hold it tightly with both hands. And what this represents is all the unwanted thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories, urges, cravings, sensations, what in that we call inner experiences or private experiences, all the stuff inside you that you don't want, you'd like to get rid of. The viewers, if you've got neck and shoulder problems, be careful with this exercise and stop it if it hurts you. But if you haven't got neck and shoulder problems, what I want you to do is, holding this sheet of paper tightly, push it as far away as you possibly can. Really push hard, because this is what everyone tells you to do. Everyone tells you to get rid of these thoughts and feelings. So push harder, everyone. Straighten your elbows. Get it as far away as possible. See if you can dislocate your shoulders. Really push hard as possible. Now, if you're really pushing hard to keep this stuff away from you, there's the first thing you should notice is this is probably getting quite tiring. You're getting
Yeah,
tired,
I am,
Stuart?
yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry, we're only going to do this for another half an hour. Okay. Secondly, notice it's really distracting. How hard to watch a movie or be present with your loved one or focus on the problem or task while you're doing this. It's really distracting. And again, the third thing to notice is, how difficult is it to take action, drive a car, cuddle a baby, cook dinner? Now rest it on your lap. And do you feel a difference? It's like an instant sense of relief, isn't it? You know, much less effort. It's much easier to focus your attention now on where you want it to go. Move your arms around. Much easier now to kind of take action, to type on a computer or cook dinner. And again, notice these thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories, they're resting there on your lap. They haven't disappeared. If there's something useful you can do with them, use them. But if not, you just let them sit there. And one of the things that, so the first exercise was a metaphor for fusion and defusion. This is an exercise, a metaphor for experiential avoidance and experiential acceptance. And that you can, both of these overlap with each other in important ways. And you can actually combine the two of them into one big metaphor. You know, which I sometimes do when I have clients referred with anxiety disorder, with a generalized anxiety disorder. You know, the client's kind of saying to me, I've got to get rid of my anxiety. I've got an anxiety disorder. And I will explain to them, well, look, you know, what's creating your anxiety disorder is that you've only got two ways of responding to anxiety. You've got this way, you know, and I'll kind of get them to do the hands as thoughts. And you've got this way, and I'll get them to do pushing away paper. And as long as you've only got these two ways of responding to all of these anxious thoughts, feelings, and sensations, you will continue to meet the criteria for an anxiety disorder. If you ever want to peel that label off you so it doesn't stick anymore, you'll need to learn a new way of responding to anxious thoughts and feelings that's different from both of those. You'll need to learn how to do this, you know. The nice thing about this kind of metaphor, with you know, letting the paper sit in your lap, is people palpably feel the relief. So many other models, relief comes from trying, you know, the idea of pain relief is trying to avoid or get rid of whatever is painful, whereas in ACT, pain relief comes from dropping the struggle with what is painful. But a caution to therapists who attempted to try this with clients: make sure they don't have neck and shoulder problems. You can always demonstrate this for them.
Cool. Oh, yeah, good advice. And that's the GP coming through in you. Okay, so what are some, I guess, strategies or advice for how people can live more of a value-led life? You know, I often talk about values, but people don't know necessarily where to start. So, is any just general advice around that?
Do you mean around clarifying what their values are?
Yeah, clarifying what their values are and then what it means to actually live according to those.
Yeah, well, so what I get people to do is, I give them a blank sheet of paper and I get them to draw two diverging arrows, you know, so start at the bottom of the sheet of paper and draw two diverging arrows that point to the top left and right hand corner. And this little diagram is what I call the choice point. And it was kind of co-created by myself and my colleagues, Joe Chiroki and Anne Bailey, as a way of kind of really mapping what we're doing in ACT. And the left-hand arrow, I get them to write in at the top the word away. And on the right-hand arrow, I get them to write the word towards. So the left-hand arrow represents away moves, things that we do that pull us away from the sort of life we want to live, where we're behaving unlike the sort of person we want to be, doing stuff that's not who we really want to be about or what helps us build the life we want to live. And the right-hand arrow, the towards moves, are things we do where we're acting effectively, being the person we want to be, doing the kind of stuff that helps us build the sort of life we want to live. And so my starting point is to get people, as they go through the day, to start kind of noticing what are their towards moves and what are their away moves. And in a therapy setting, I say to clients, you know, towards moves are things that you're going to start doing or do more of if our work here is successful. And away moves are things that you're either going to stop doing or do less of if our work here is successful. So let's start there. Tell me about the stuff that you're going to cut down doing and do less of. And tell me about stuff that you're already doing that you want to keep on doing. Or do more of. And that's usually a good starting point. So you'll usually get a lot of information. Most people can readily identify things that they want to keep doing. And then we can start exploring values from that. The tool's called the choice point because at the bottom of those two diverging arrows, I usually write a little draw a little circle, and I call this the choice point, and say underneath this are all the difficult thoughts and feelings and situations. And when these difficult thoughts and feelings and situations show up, you've got choices. There are away moves you can do that take you away from the life you want. So anxiety shows up, the away move might be eating a packet of double coated chocolate Tim Tams. And then there's towards moves you can do when those thoughts and feelings and situations show up. And towards moves, you know, might be, you know, instead of eating a double-coated chocolate Tim Tam, I push my feet into the floor and breathe into the anxiety and ground and center myself. It's a nice kind of little way of just mapping out what we're trying to do in ACT. The stuff underneath the choice point is what technically we'd call antecedent situation thoughts and feelings that trigger the problematic behaviors. The away moves are kind of values, incongruent behaviors motivated by fusion and avoidance. Our aim is to kind of reduce those. And the towards moves are values, guided effective behaviors. And our aim is to teach people unhooking skills so that they can unhook from these difficult thoughts and feelings and respond with values. So in other words, the antecedents, the kind of thoughts, feelings, situations that are, you know, we would map at the bottom of that diagram, they changed. Instead of being antecedents to the old, unworkable, ineffective away moves, they now become antecedents for towards moves, for values-guided, effective behaviors. And that's also a way how you can, you know, fit ACT and ERP together very nicely. You know, you can think about it as, you know, whatever you're wanting to do ERP with goes at the bottom of the choice point, the situations, the thoughts, the feelings. And, you know, the old response is the away move, and the new response you're trying to encourage is the towards move.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I always keep the choice point in mind. Anything in life where I know that I have a goal or a value and I'm like, I can do that thing, but it reminds me to visualize me going off track. And it almost then puts a consequence for me doing that away move. So I'm more likely to choose the towards.
So what I ask clients then usually to do as a first little exercise in clarifying that is between now and next session, just notice the towards and away moves that you do all day long, because you and me, we're all in the same boat all day long. We're doing towards and away moves. So when you do something you call a towards move, you know, notice it. What's it like? What are you doing? How are you behaving? And what we'll do is gather a lot of information about that, from which we can usually start to tease out values. We'll also ask them to notice your away moves and notice what hooks you. What are the thoughts and feelings that kind of hook you and pull you into those away moves?
Yeah, no, they're a good example. Okay, so I've got a few listener questions now. First one is how to apply ACT when you feel overwhelmed or experiencing high levels of emotion.
Well, that's a great question. I teach clients and therapists and everybody really to do an ultra brief mindfulness exercise called dropping anchor. I called it dropping anchor because the metaphor is there's an emotional storm here, a storm of thoughts, feelings, emotions, and while you're being swept away by the storm, there's nothing effective you can do. If a ship is sailing into or a boat is sailing into harbor when a storm blows up, the first thing that vessel needs to do is drop anchor. And of course, dropping anchor doesn't make the storm go away. It just holds the ship steady or the boat steady until the storm eventually passes. So there's a brief mindfulness skill that anyone can learn very quickly that I call dropping anchor. And the acronym for it is ACE. So the A is for acknowledge your thoughts and feelings. The C is come back into your body, and the E is engage in the world. So it begins by acknowledging your thoughts and feelings. So just notice your thoughts, notice the feelings, noticing the anxiety, notice that you're overwhelmed, notice how the overwhelm is affecting you, where you're feeling it most, and so forth. And that's your starting point, just acknowledging it. And often it's useful to add a little phrase like, I'm feeling overwhelmed, or I'm noticing anxiety, or I'm having a feeling of panic, or I'm having an experience of being overwhelmed. It's just a kind of non-judgmental way of describing the experience. Something you can do very quickly in a few seconds, and then you come back into your body. The C is for come back into your body. So I encourage people to find their best way of doing that. I usually recommend begin by kind of pushing your feet hard into the floor, straightening your back. If your hands are free, gently pushing your fingertips together and moving your shoulders. Once you feel like you're back in your body and you've got some control of your physical actions, which again often usually just takes a couple of seconds, then the next step is to engage with the world. So look around, notice where you are, notice what you're doing, right here, right now. And I just get people to cycle through that over and over again. So I might just get your listeners just to do this. We'll just do a 1 minute version of this so they kind of get a sense of this. So whatever you're doing right now, wherever you are, kind of just take a moment to acknowledge your thoughts and feelings. Just notice what thoughts are popping up, what your mind's doing. Notice what you're feeling in your body. Notice where any intense feelings or sensations right now, or notice the absence of them if you're feeling happy right now. So just acknowledge what you're thinking and feeling in this moment. And at the same time, come back into your body. Push your feet into the floor, straighten your back, shrug your shoulders. If your hands are free, gently push your fingertips together. Have a stretch, maybe stretch your neck or your arms or your whatever, something that helps you really get a sense that there's a body here and you have control of it. Move your arms, your legs, your feet, your back. You've got physical control over your actions with this body. And at the same time, just look around, notice where you are, what can you see, what can you hear, what are you doing right now? There are thoughts and feelings here. Once again, just acknowledge the thoughts and feelings that are showing up for you. And there's a body here. Once again, come back into your body, move it, stretch it. And there's a world here around you. Once again, look around and notice where you are and what you're doing right here, right now. And that's basically it. So, and you can do that for as short or as long as you like. That was the 1 minute version, but you can do a 10 minute version of that. If folks want to check out the free resources page on my website, I've got four audio recordings that you can download for free, which vary from 1 minute to 11 minutes for that exercise. And so it's great if people are feeling overwhelmed. It's great if people are feeling anxious. It doesn't get rid of the feelings, but it immediately starts to help you diffuse from the thoughts, accept the feelings, come back into your body. As you do that exercise, you're getting more present, you're opening up to your inner experience, and you're doing what matters. So it's starts to introduce all these core act processes. And the lovely thing about it is you don't have to wait till an emotional storm blows up. When a ship's in harbor, even if the weather's really good, if the ship doesn't drop anchor, it will drift off.
That's
So
true.
we all, we drift off throughout the day. We can, any time that we're drifting off, we can kind of drop an anchor, come back, engage, focus. It's really good to practice this in those little moments of the day where you're a bit frustrated or a bit anxious or a bit angry. It's also good to switch it in practice in times of day where you're finding it hard to focus, you're a bit bored or distracted. Helps you to come back and engage, and by practicing it with those little moments, then you'll be better prepared to deal with the big storms.
Really, really good answer. So another listener question, which is around cognitive distortions. They want to know, what if someone notices they're having these have sorry, having these distorted thinking patterns? Where's the best place to start?
Well, they've already started just by noticing it. And then the next thing is, I mean, I'm not being flippant there. It's
No.
kind of, the starting point in diffusion is to notice the thoughts. Even the very fact that you've noticed your thoughts usually implies a little bit of diffusion, because when you're completely fused with your thoughts, you're not even aware you're having them. So if they're noticing these thoughts, then that's a great start. The next step in the ACT model usually would be finding a non-judgmental way of naming the cognitive process. So, here the generic version is the not good enough story. Almost always, these cognitive distortions boil down to someone or something is not good enough, or has not been good enough in the past, or will not be good enough in the future. So if people are struggling for it, they can call it the not good enough story, but they could be more specific. Oh, here's my abandonment story, or here's my life's unfair story, or here's with my mind, I use this kind of playful naming, his radio doom and gloom. That's another kind of classic ACT metaphor. The human mind is a lot like radio doom and gloom. It broadcasts a lot of negative stuff about the past, present, and the future. And so most of my cognitive distortions fit very nicely with that kind of metaphor. Ah, here's radio doom and gloom again, broadcasting all the bad stuff that's going to happen, So just a kind of playful or non-judgmental way of naming the cognitive process. I mean, people can name it in a very technical way, if wanted. If they, this is selective abstraction. Well, then you can kind of go, okay, so here's selective abstraction showing up, So that would be the first step, kind of noticing. The second step would be naming it. And then the third step, I would probably, if they're new to ACT, I would be getting them to kind of drop anchor. So, okay, so here's this showing up. Now come back into my body. Where am I? And that will usually give quite a lot of diffusion. And then the fourth step would be, okay, so these thoughts are here. Now I've got choices. Let's come back to this is a choice point. There are ways that I can act on these thoughts that are going to be life enhancing and take me towards the life I want. There are other ways that I can act in response to these thoughts that are going to take me away from the life I want. So what am I going to choose here? And then hopefully choose to do some towards moves, living your values, acting effectively, and take that distortion with you. Oh, I'm going to take my distortion with me about my day, and it will hang around or it will go. It will vary,
Yeah, good answer. So a couple of quick questions towards the end then is if you could pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old Russ, what would you tell
Oh,
him?
gosh, what would I tell him? Cut back on the chocolate Tim Tams. No, actually, the 20-year-old Russ was still in England, so he didn't have Tim Tams. What was he eating? He was eating penguins and orange clubs and stuff like that. Have you still got orange clubs? Do they still exist?
Yeah, I was more of a mint club guy.
Oh, you're a mint club. But penguins, I used to love penguins. Penguins. Well, so English viewers, British viewers will know the penguin, the Tim Tam's a lot like the penguin, but it's got more chocolate. So I don't know. Do you have USA viewers? I don't know what they would.
Predominantly America and Canada.
No, well, oh, right, okay. Well, folks, if you're from USA, Canada, it's worth coming to Australia just for the Tim Tams, you know. So what was the question? Oh, 20-year-old Russ, what would I tell him? I would tell him, you know, to pay less attention. So the 20-year-old Russ was very, very worried about what other people thought of him and was very much trying to be somebody that he thought people would like. So if you speak to people who knew me at med school at age 20, they'll tell you that I was kind of like a drunken buffoon. I would, you know, get very drunk and do all sorts of outrageous things. anyone who knew me well has got all sorts of stories. And I was doing that because I wanted people to like me. And I had this idea that if I was outrageous, I mean, I'd take my clothes off and dance naked on tables at the middle of medical balls, and you know, and that's the mild end of things that I was doing, you know, which of course just made people think I was weird and strange and didn't have the desired result at all. So I would firstly tell him to stop trying to be popular and just kind of focus on you know, being interested in people and being yourself. And I'd tell him secondly to cut back on the drinking. and I'd tell him, I'd talk to him about self-compassion. You know, self-compassion was something that I didn't even know about until I was in my late 20s. My default setting was always just to beat myself up. And so this idea of being kind to myself and acknowledging my suffering and being there in a kind, supportive way for myself was quite a late discovery. So I'd talk to 20-year-old Russ about self-compassion.
Cool. Yeah, good advice. And lastly then, you've got a billboard in Melbourne, which I believe is where you are. What do you want written on that billboard for everyone to see? It's the hardest question.
Life gives most to those who make the most of what life gives.
It'll take me a while to get my head around.
That's actually the closing sentence of The Happiness Trap. So, you know, life gives most to those who make the most of what life gives. I think that's very true. You know, it's like you don't get to choose everything that life gives you, but you can choose what you do with it, you know, to a large extent. Then if people want to get those free audios, if they just I've got a number of different websites. Probably the easiest one to go to is imlearningact.com. imlearningact.com. There's a page there called resources, and if they go down that, they'll find those different audio recordings.
Cool. Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes as well. But thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
So there you have it. Thanks a lot for listening all the way through. I deeply appreciate it. And if you get time to leave a review, I'd also appreciate that. Quick disclaimer, guys. This podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, thank you and take care.